Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to another episode of The Four Elements. Tonight we have a very exciting show. Tonight we will be discussing grief and healing grief through ritual with a special guest, Dr. Maladoma Somme. So Dr. Maladoma Somme is an initiated Dogra elder. He is a renowned lecturer and author traveling the world teaching the Dogra culture and spiritual technology. He's authored three books thus far. Those books are The Healing Wisdom of Africa, Ritual, Power, Healing, and Community, and Of Water in the Spirit. Upcoming, you can actually see Dr. Maladoma Somme in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Shrine of the Black Madonna on April 22nd through the 24th. He will be giving a public talk and doing divinations. And if you need additional information, if you have any questions regarding that event, go to the Four Elements Facebook page and post your questions, and we will respond to them as quickly as possible. So without further ado, oh, and also, I almost forgot, we actually have a special guest host, Amira Branch. So, Amira, I'll give you a minute to introduce yourself.
Thank you. Hello, good evening, everyone. My name is Amira, and I was on the show last couple of weeks, so I'll just briefly introduce myself. I am the program director of the East Coast Village, where I work with Elder Maladoma in bringing forward healing rituals of the Dogra tradition. And I myself have been initiated into elderhood in the Dogra tradition. And I've been traveling this journey for, you know, about 10 years now. So this is a very dear and very special moment in time for me, especially on the topic of grief within the African diasporic community. So I'm looking forward to the show tonight with our elder.
Oh, great. So I guess we can dive right into the topic for tonight. Well, before we get started, Elder Maladoma, is there anything that you want to say before we get started?
Well, I want to say that as a prelude to this rather sacred moment, we need to pause and think about the energy of our ancestors coming together, and pray for the guidance, the clarity, and the blessing that may come as a result of our search for healing, our relentless commitment to healing. And therefore, let's place this whole presence, this whole context under their hand and their blessing, so that their wisdom can come through.
Ashe.
Okay. Ashe. Ashe. So, Amira, do you want to lead us off with the show?
Sure. I'll be happy to. So, you know, Elder Maladoma, we have been having these conversations lately about grief and ritual, particularly around the what I've come to use the term healing the wounded African soul. And those conversations were more or less motivated by looking at many of the things that have been happening in our African diaspora community, particularly in America. We've had so many griefs, so many tragedies that have happened. And it has brought out so much anger and so much frustration and so much pain within the hearts of the Africans in America. And so we've been having this conversation about, you know, what we can do to kind of begin the healing process, not that it hasn't begun before, but begin to heal. And I was just looking at your own journey from your book Of Water and the Spirit, which is pretty much, I guess, your autobiography. And I witnessed that we've been given a glimpse into your world. So I witnessed that you also experienced loss, starting from a very early age when your grandfather passed, to going through and being taken from your family and being taken from your tribe, and being, you know, brought up in a very strict and abusive environment. So you have some personal experiences with grief and loss. Would you mind sharing how that has impacted you and how you have managed to come to a place of wholeness and reconciliation?
Well, thank you for this question. But first of all, I would like to stress the point that losses are only the most visible and starting points or starting elements that invite grief. In other words, that we have to pay attention to the fact that every time grief is felt, that is simply because something that contradicts our basic sense of humanity, something that brings us to the threshold, has been made so visible that we need to pause and pay attention to the message therein. For me, of course, that thing begun at the very early stages of my life was the first most important thing that had to do with being separated from the root, separated from the cradle of my belonging. And so I realized that on hindsight, anyone that has had to be forced away from a sense of belonging and a sense of identity, that person automatically signs up for a sacred expression of loss, or of, call it, injustice, or anything that might be a direct response to the crisis of the soul as a result of the dramatic event that happened. So for me, it was not just a separation from the cradle of my belonging, but it was also the kind of reality that were forcefully imposed upon me. Indeed, an education or an introduction to a reality, to a worldview that has nothing to do with that which your soul and your spirit is naturally tuned in by birth, can translate into one form of trauma or another, which, unless vented through the agency of grief, can translate into something much worse. I've had to deal with that myself directly as I grew up in a boarding school, a Catholic boarding school, where I was taught everything but the very thing that was essentially part of my identity, something that was supposed to honor my identity. So I imagine, again, that this is not to be considered an isolated case, that on the grand scheme of things, so many of us who today are in the diaspora can indeed find ways to relate to this situation, and can indeed, in broadening the imagination, realize very quickly how that has impacted the path of their lives in terms of its quality and the kind of challenges that it posed to the delivery of their gifts and the fulfillment of their purpose. So I've reached a stage of my life where I no longer see my own itinerary as a personal thing, but more as a collective perspective, as one that is mirrored by so many other people, that it should become one of the biggest subjects of conversation, the subject that allows us to look at ways to address this issue, not really solely intellectually, but a reflection that can guide us into some sacred space we're in.
We lost our elder.
Yes, we actually did.
Guess.
Okay. Let me see if I can give him a call. Give me one moment, please, to let him know that he dropped. Oh, Amira, while I'm doing that, can you have a brief call? Oh, I think there he is. I think he just jumped back on. Give me 1 second.
We got disconnected. Yeah.
Hello? Okay, there we go.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, you're back on.
All right, so where did I arrive before we got disconnected?
You were speaking to the fact that your experience and what you've come to understand is not just a personal experience, but a reflection of the collective.
Oh, okay, and so we didn't lose very much, yeah. So I was... going on to say that this is the opportunity for all of us to come together in a context in which we can address this issue not just intellectually, but from the heart and from the spirit, bringing all of this into a sacred context for the healing that we all deserve. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are we still there?
Okay. Yes. Yes.
We're
okay.
Here.
Great.
Okay. So, my question would be like, how, based upon your experience, so how is the African on the continent and throughout the diaspora being impacted by the grief that has been passed down from generation to generation? How do you see him dealing with that, even though he may not see that or know that he's dealing with that, grief?
Well, the modern African in general, but more particularly the Dagara modern self, who is still in touch with the wisdom of the ancestors as it pertained to the management of emotion, knows that there are various ways of addressing upsetting situation that damage the soul and the spirit, and that these processes are ritualistic in essence and are eventually made broadly available, particularly through the agency of what we call funeral ritual, which in the Dagara context goes on for sometime up to 72 hours, which is 3 full days during the course of which people are offered the opportunity of letting their emotion lead them. In other words, a kind of extroverted expression of the sense, the deep sense of loss and the crisis of the soul that brings about. Now, as far as the African abroad, the African in the diaspora is concerned, the dispensation that is prevalent in the modern world is what the African in the diaspora is most subjected to, an approach to loss that is rather superficial, if you ask me, and yet seems to be like the one most important piece in this whole project of restoring wholeness to a person in whose life something has happened to, as if to dismantle its basic structure and create the kind of chaos that run the risk of snatching a person's identity away and in the place putting something else in that may have nothing to do with the person. And so how that should be dealt with must first and foremost be looked at from the perspective of that which already exists in the continent of Africa. Bringing the choreography of grief into a place like this with a spirit of minor adjustment and adaptation can indeed go a long way, if not in dealing with all the problems, at least in setting off a series of transformation which down the road can result in a person feeling at least much better and therefore much more positive in his or her approach to everyday life. And through this regain of confidence can therefore be trusted to tackle life from a place of empowerment. So consequently, I see that in a way we're not asked to reinvent a wheel or to even dive into psychological consideration on how to overcome and to survive crises of the soul and crises of the spirit, but in fact to learn from pre-existing models with the imagination broad enough to take into account the fact that the environment of the occurrence of these processes is different. The modern environment being different may require certain kind of adjustment and certain kind of alignment. So imagination is still needed, and that is when facilitation of such thing becomes a sine qua non in ensuring that everything works according to the goal set for getting into this. Mm-hmm. I would like to suggest also that in the end, it's about a collaborative coming together around the blueprints of grief ritual in such a way that everyone is a contributor as well as a beneficiary. See. Furthermore, it is critical that we understand that such sacred moment is not to be confused with weakness of one type or another. In other words, dealing with a specter of emotion associated with losses has to be looked at as one of the most radical addressing of something that has in it an unspoken prohibition, which means that expression of emotion in the most explicit fashion may not be recommended by the culture. And this is why we must understand that doing this is taking our own life into our hand and going with it in such a way that it doesn't have an existing model in this part of the world. We're drawing from an indigenous model.
Go ahead, Amira.
I just wanted to ask if you wanted to invite people to call in if they so desire, one.
Absolutely.
And then I had a question for melanoma.
Okay. So I'll say this real quick and then you can ask your question. If you have any questions or comments, please please press 1 on your dial pad, or if you are actually in the chat room, please post your question in the comments. Okay, go ahead, Amira.
So having been involved in grief ritual melanoma, I can certainly, you know, attest to the reservations that we have in the Western world about really connecting on that deeply emotional level. And as I thought about that, it had me thinking, you know, myself being, oh, you know, what am I grieving about? Okay, so life is tough, life is rough, and you know, you just kind of get over it, you just kind of move on. And so I knew my first experience in going through a grief ritual, I was working in from a place of logic and reasoning that I have dealt with my stuff and therefore what it is that I need to grieve about, which, you know, inhibits the whole process. And so I was thinking about even, you know, within the diaspora itself, that there are many of us who have come to a place of, let's call it, acceptance around the way our world exists, except when we see something that causes us to pause, as you said. And so I wonder if we really understand what it means to actually go through this process of grieving and what it is that we're grieving about, because you spoke about loss. And many people feel as if, well, that was, you know, we've lost so much for so many years, you know, it's kind of time to get over it right now. So what do we need to come together and grieve for? You know, it's just like the world is what it is. How would you speak to that about what it means to step into that threshold, into that doorway of grief? What is it that we need to grieve about? What is it we need to bring to the table?
Well, it's just about everything. The loss of identity, the loss of connectivity, loss in general is the lot of the diaspora. That is the reason why it earned the name diaspora. The issue is more about not so much dwelling in this kind of approach that, you know, what is done, and we have to get over it. Stiffen up and show yourself as a grown-up person, as if somehow being grown-up means being repulsed by any kind of expression of grief. Furthermore, the whole idea of grief must be also checked within the light of the idea of expressing emotion, particularly that part of emotion that is complete with tears and with wailing and so on and so forth, that modernity tend to look at as a sign of weakness or, in best case scenario, vulnerability. My sense is that far from worrying whether we have something to grieve about, it is more about thinking in terms of what more do we lose by refusing to grieve? What is it that we end up doing that is actually collaborating with the status quo when we choose to shy away from grief and therefore approach our lives solely from the standpoint of politics, society, civil rights, you name it, when we know that the reclaiming of our authenticity must first begin with a very hard look at the self and where we came from in order to be able to know where we're going. And so as a result, what kind of original initiative can we take? And an initiative that does not have a precedent and it's solid enough that it touches on all the departments of the human consciousness. And this is when grief shows up as an extremely sacred thing to consider.
Mm-hmm.
I'm more worried when perhaps we tend to think of grief as the kind of thing that could be replaced by something more practical in light of our collective evolution away from the ancient wisdom and into a modern situation complete with all kinds of ways and means and technology that may suggest that there are other ways. But when we begin to look at other ways, do we notice that the movement itself is more of a movement away?
Mm-hmm. Have we lost the elder again?
Yes, we certainly have.
Okay. Okay. So I guess you'll try to connect with him again.
Yeah, he'll definitely dial back in. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, I just wondered if he is aware that he got cut off the last time. So. But anyway, so I mean, I was, you know, as we wait for him to get back on, I just wanted to say that I was really, really moved when, with what he mentioned about us doing, you know, the politics and the practical thing, because that has been my thing, that has been the emphasis that we have been placing on getting reconciliation and retribution and all the things that we do within the diaspora, and ignoring or even attempting to approach it from a ritualistic standpoint. So when he gets back to the line, which I think he has.
Yes, he has.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I think we're at that point where it is grief could be seen as a radical cultural and political stand, a posture that is a choice explicitly made to go along with the ways of the ancestors, trusting that this way is life-giving. So I would really want to be able to make this approach from every standpoint in order to underline its poignancy, its urgency, and the fact that we cannot be wanting to transcend our current stalemate, our current stagnation, by shying away or thinking that the ways of our ancestors are too old to be relevant to our situation in these days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. We actually have a caller who actually has a question or comment. So let me grab this caller real quick. One moment. Okay. Caller with the last four digits 8823. State your name, your comment or question, and where you're calling from.
Oh, hello. My name is Quintress, and actually, you touched on the subject that I was actually having a question about. My question was with the aspect of grief. I was reading somewhere that it's just mainly like the loss of loved one or of someone that has passed on. But you actually touched on it where you said that it's actually the loss of your identity and reclaiming your authenticity. So I do appreciate that you actually answered my question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It is far more important than just you know, the generic inevitable losses of loved one that we are constantly called upon to deal with. There's a deeper loss that we need to recover from.
Mm. Wow. Well, Quintress, thank you for your question. And so we actually have another caller in the queue that has a question. I'll grab the caller real quick. Caller with the last four digits, 7654. Caller 7654, state your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment. Hello, caller, with the last four digits, 7654.
Yeah, 7654. This is Prince Bella, just to say hi, Fanan. I'm just on my walk, but we got disconnected for a while, but I'm back again. So I'm just trying to follow everything, and then I'll be back. I'm in the show with you guys. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hello.
So,
okay,
Amir,
you are actually... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to ask if you had a commentary, because I did want to make a commentary with what Maladoma said when we lost him there for a moment. So I was saying when we lost you there, Maladoma, that you really hit a point for me that was quite deep and personal, because I was reflecting on the fact that how I came to this place of thinking about the woundedness within the diaspora is because I was looking at all the things that we have been attempting to do, you know, politically, educationally, you know, structurally, if you would, or practically. I like your word, practically, which feels practical, because sometimes when you feel helpless or hopeless, you want to get something done, so you go into the mode of actually seeing the fruits of your labor, if you would. But you really hit home for me when you said that what else could we be losing by not grieving about, you know, addressing our loss? And that was just an amazing moment of epiphany when I'm like, wow. So I think about, and also I think, so the first thing I thought about is the words that you use, the term that you use, the cradle of belonging, and the caller called in and talk about losing a sense of identity. And it's really something that has gotten to me at a deeply bone level, is the big loss around our identity. Because I'm kind of getting a little bit teary-eyed right now. Because I know that from the standpoint of being an African, for example, that, you know, you can claim without any shadow of a doubt, you know, I am an African. Mm-hmm. But the Africans in the diaspora, we're struggling right now, as far as I see, with being able to identify ourselves. If you see some of the conversations that go on, that, you know, this person is a brown person, or they're Afro-Hispanic, so they're not really black, or, you know, black, or whether I'm black or brown, whether I'm mixed and I'm claiming to be American and not African American, or all of that. And I it pains me so much, and, you know, I want to grieve with these people, and I want to grieve over this, because I think that a lot of times we ignore the fact, or we don't understand how deep this loss, as you said, this cradle of belonging that we have lost, has impacted our lives to the extent that we are more or less kind of in a kind of limbo state, and not really knowing how to move forward or how to go back, because we don't know who we really are.
That's right.
We don't know how to identify with that. And so we fight against each other because we're feeling this association with our identity. And to me, grief brings us to a place where we can then begin to bring that to the table and reconnect ourselves to who it is and what it is that we belong to. How do you speak about that in terms of that cradle of belonging that you spoke about, which is at the heart of some of our losses?
Well, this is brilliant. It's really brilliant what you say. There is reason to believe that everyone in the diaspora longs for something. And the deeper longing may not just be limited to simple, just making both ends meet. It might be something that we have forgotten the name of. Because when we talk about belonging, the sense of homecoming, etc., you've got to understand, all of these can be lost in translation in the context of the internalization of the new identity resulting from what you may call the cultural lobotomy that, you know, diasporic individual may be privy to. You know, history has done a lot of work in making sure that some of the fundamental of our sense of identity are indeed sufficiently deleted to the point where who we are become assigned unto us by a third party. And so when, therefore, the whole idea of belonging become part of the conversation, we have to raise the very issue as to what does it look like? Is it belonging to an institution that is already pre-existing, belonging to a waves of, call it religious thinking, or some kind of spiritual tradition that we have had to, you know, to learn simply because it's a fashionable thing. You got to belong to something today. The kind of belonging that translate into a feeling of loss could be likened to, you know, the belonging to the origin. The origin of ourselves, allowing to see how that original sense of belonging has been looted upon, eroded, diminished, transformed, and transmuted into all kinds of things to the point where the term itself could be rather confusing. And only in those instances where people, for one reason or another, become aware of the value of ancestry and tradition, only at that time can we begin to see affinities of this awareness with a sense of belonging that is connected with the origin. And by origin, of course, I mean the kind of identity that was once there before any kind of drastic event began to change that altogether. And so what I'm seeing here is that there is a lot of ways in which, of course, we can all rally around this idea of loss and the longing to belong, the kind of identity that is strictly African. But when all is said and done, we still need to look deeper into what it looks like in the minds of the various people who have come together. We can see that the need to belong is not as much the issue as to whether that belonging has a lasting effect in raising the bars of consciousness within us to a deeper pursuit of the tradition connected to the cradle of the culture, the mindset, the civilization, we may call it, that we have claimed belonging to. And in the end, the longing should not be limited to a kind of terminal homecoming, but more to a homecoming that begins a whole initiatory journey towards remembering the very values that were once the nuts and bolts holding together firmly a soul, a spirit, a body grounded, connected to the source in such a way that no storm, no winds of adversity can actually kind of objectify or challenge that.
I love that.
Oh, thank you.
I love that. That's such a joyous feeling. What you said, I mean, that's just
that just uplifts my heart to kind of think along those lines, that that connecting yourself to your roots makes you so solid and so strong that you are not easily swayed by comes your way.
It is the reason why, in talking about grief, we have to realize that the capacity to dive into grief is in itself revolutionary, because what you stand to do may not be in accordance with the programming that was lodged into yourself and meant to stay there. You are in this way reacting rather radically against a dispensation that has taken hold of your being, with a mind to shake it hard enough to pull it out of yourself, so that you can begin to look at yourself maybe from just a different perspective. You know, everybody that has participated in a grief ritual wholeheartedly can tell you how exhausting it can be. When the layers and layers of losses and upset and you name it has been...
Oh, no. He dropped again.
I think we lost him again. Okay, well.
Yes, we did.
I guess we just had some internet connection issues there. So what do you think about what he's been saying while we're waiting for him to reconnect again?
Well, I think that, I mean, of course, everything he's saying is very profound. And what comes to mind is, you know, people having access to this technology, or to what I mean by technology is people having access to grief rituals. As a matter of fact, he just came back on.
Okay.
Hello, Elder Mom. Okay, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, came back. Yeah. So I don't know where I stopped. I just know that the topic is so broad that I like to look at it from as many perspectives as possible. But I was suggesting that radical grief is one that takes a lot of energy out of a person. And you know, a couple months ago I was in Africa, and I got the chance to be at two different funerals, and one of them was a close family member, and I found myself really diving into my own grief, and all I could remember was all the changes resulting in massive losses that the death of a family member was bringing back to my memory. And I realized that somehow the death of this person was affording me the opportunity to review a long itinerary littered with all kinds of losses, the feeling of which really had not subsided. And in the end, I felt grateful to the dead relative for giving me this opportunity, for making it legitimate, for making it sacred and utterly positive, because in the end, it allowed me to realize that all these losses that I have endured in my life are always there as teachers, as food for thought, for the healing of my spirit, the healing of my soul, and that it is opportunities or occasions such as this that bring them all back again, as if to contribute one more time to elevating the bars of my imagination and my resolve in not letting these losses diminish who I am, and so on and so forth. There's something about grieving that one cannot say must end once and for all. completely. Mm. It is as if it is it's part of the diet of the soul, the diet of the spirit. Something that we've got to be willing to come back to over and over again because it is part of good living.
Mm-hmm.
And so to look at it from this perspective can give us yet another approach to grieving that is not rooted on something terminal. Let's get this job done and move on. No.
Mm-hmm.
Let us return to the table where we can provide the best diet to our soul and our spirit using the occasion that has been afforded us. And that is why it is not a good idea to think of grief and to want to go to grief because you want to get something finished and so that you can move on and never think about grief again. This is one of those things that when you knock and it opened the door, you enter. You stay with it. You stay with it because it fertilizes every little department of yourself towards the constant building and rebuilding of wholeness inside of you, based on the assumption that this world is constantly challenging us in such a way that if we don't pay attention, we erode without knowing it.
Right, absolutely.
So, in a way, grieving is a blessing to our soul. It is really an honor that is given into us by the ancestors to constantly find a healing space to take care of each other and to take care of ourselves individually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I would like, therefore, to see that, you know, those who prefer to look at this from, let's call it intellectual perspective, be able to see the symbolism associated with grief and the reason why every human being is given tears. They're not just to keep our visual apparatus kind of lubricated in a constant basis. The capacity to express and to demonstrate our connection with emotion is really not something to look at or to take for granted, because our humanity must be therefore measured by the yardstick of our capacity to know that we are emotional beings, and it is through this emotion that we let our hearts and our spirit express the kind of thing that perhaps cannot be spoken in English, but nonetheless has value. There are ways of being with each other that cannot be any better, or should I say, cannot be replaced with language, and that if it can, let it be that the language of our emotion has to be understood properly in order for us to see the depth of what we sign up for, so that we can see the beauty of it in each other and within ourselves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question. You know, there are many people dealing with grief, and you know, I'm sure that the listeners tonight are dealing with some form of grief also. And my question is, if someone does not have access to a grief ritual, or they may have access but there's not a grief ritual coming up in their area for months, is there something that they can do today, like some type of minor ritual process they can do today to begin dealing with that grief?
Well, one of the expression of grief can just be verbal. And in order to give it the deepest meaning it deserves, it must be done in the presence of the ancestors within some form of sacred space. And by that, I'm suggesting that people who need, indeed, to tackle their own grief individually, although it's a bit odd, needs to have enough imagination to feel themselves surrounded by their ancestors so that their grief is not private, but their grief is in the company of their ancestors and therefore collective. You know, when you grieve all by yourself, you don't achieve the kind of outcome consistent with grief that is expressed collectively with the support of one another. And so a person who wants to do that simply because of the scarcity of such opportunity in this context should have an imagination broad enough to include all their ancestors and to sit in front of a shrine where they can express, give a name to that which is the reason for their grief, and to be willing to speak in great detail about how the loss is making them feel, what the loss is doing to their emotional bodies, to their heart, to their spirit, etc., etc. And in that process, to allow any kind of tears that may be accompanying that to come out naturally, and to not shut them down simply because they are the measure of how deep we are in touch of we are in touch with that which we are expressing. In other words, an expression of grief that is not endorsed by the outpouring of tears simply indicates a certain depth that is not deep enough, and therefore it is a useful thing to keep digging, to keep going deeper and deeper until you reach the well of water that is consistent with the goal of grief. So this is something that, of course, could turn out rather tedious, but it's all about how willing the individuals are to keep trying. Because again, this is not something you do once and then you're no longer expected to do anything. It is useful thing that to expect that the first time may not work as well as the second time, that may not work as well as the third time, etc., etc. You are going deeper and deeper into grief, and therefore first time, second time, third time don't matter. What matters is that you stay with it long enough until you feel that you have hit something. You know,
I can totally attest to that, melanoma going back again. Because as I said, the first time I entered it, I was totally on the surface and couldn't like really relate. And doing it over and over and over, I mean, stuff came up that I thought was already quote unquote dealt with.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, I had, you know, kind of resolved and realizing that they kept on coming to the surface. And so I can totally attest to the fact that you can never stop peeling away the layers enough to really get your heart to a place that feels joyous and whole and back in alignment with your rootedness. So I do totally agree and have experienced that myself, especially somebody who is very, very controlled emotionally. I've learned now to just let the tears come and they go, and I'm like, I'm just grieving, you know, and not feel like it's a problem. But it was a problem for me to show tears. It was a problem for me to cry and a problem for me to break down. Instead, exhibited itself as anger and frustration.
Oh, yeah.
Versus just allowing myself to just
cry and just be mm-hmm. okay with crying.
Yeah.
So anyways, I thought I heard Torrance had something to say.
Yeah, we actually have a caller that has a question. So let me grab the question really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Caller with the last four digits, 8823. State your name and your comment or question, please.
My name is Quintress, and my question is, if grief or some form of grief is passed on through from generation to generation, when you do a grief ritual, is mm-hmm. once you get down to the core of it, or once you peel all of the layers back, mm-hmm. will some of that grief be eradicated, or is that something that's always going to be with you?
That's a very good question. There is an idea that in every family there's a well of grief that is shared. Grief as such is not just therefore a private individual property, and this is the reason why it's they say that emotion is like something that belongs to the collective. So in Dagra culture, they are people who are considered the vessel of grief. They're the one with the capacity to stir grief out of people who do have difficulty getting into it by themselves. They don't certainly go to the person and instruct them on how to feel. They just show grief. They just demonstrate grief. They just grieve, period. And so, therefore, it is possible that a person
Oh, no. Hello, Amira?
Oh, we lost him again.
Yes,
okay.
We did.
Okay.
Quintus, just bear with us for just one moment. Oh, there he is. He's right back on. Good. Hello, Elder Melodoma. Oh, I guess that wasn't him. Oh,
well, I guess he's just trying to get himself back on. Okay.
Oh, do you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, okay. And so, therefore, it is possible that this is a specialty into itself. You carry the grief of the collective, and therefore it is not necessarily that your own grief is still pending. It's that there is a well of grief that is village-like, that is family-like, et cetera, et cetera. And this is the reason why it's hard to say that once you have grieved something, it is over. The example I was giving earlier of the death of my aunt, I had to organize the funeral, and during the course of which I found out that I was being reminded of all the losses that I've experienced in the past 40 years or even 50 years, and realizing in the end that her death was a gift to me to remember all of this and to grieve that all over again. So consequently, it's not about getting rid of something and moving on to the next and so forth. It's about transmuting. It's about transforming all of that which has been holding you down sufficiently so you become more like a fluid person, like a river flowing in the direction of least resistance towards the home of your belonging. And so in that case, the journey itself is the destination. And so we cannot look at this from this beginning, middle, and end. Otherwise, we'll end up saying about some people that they don't have any grief to express, which is not true. It can never be true. As long as the world still faces big issues, somehow the grief associated with that has some extension within us. So this is part of the reason why it is more important to puncture this barrier that separates us from grief than to think that we can fulfill grief. We can deal with grief and put it behind us so that we can live happily ever after. The thing about grief is that the more you grieve, the more joy you have in your life. Joy is a measure of the depths of grief. Otherwise, joy has a level of artificiality that in the end may not be all that fully satisfactory to the person. I believe also, if I still remember the nature of the question that was asked, that at this juncture, we're being asked to check the frequencies of our heart to see how much of this type of emotion we possess. And if we have it so much to the point where we can grieve without even knowing what we're grieving about, most likely, we are grieving for the collective. We are grieving perhaps for those who cannot grieve. And that is equally important than to think that you can take care of your own grief and get it done ahead of a lot of other people, etc., etc. See? Anyway, so this is as much as I can answer because the cutoff kind of made me lose the content of the question. We're still connected, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Hello, Quintus.
So,
Yes.
Okay. Did you get your question answered? Did you have any additional questions?
No, I got an answer. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. Okay, Amira, you got to say something.
Yes, in light of what you said, Elder Maladoma, I have to say that you kind of touched on where I feel that I am and where I see a lot of people are in terms of carrying the weight of the collective grief.
Yes.
And that is such a tremendous feeling to be walking, because many of us who are, you know, very empathetic people, you know, we are constantly being bombarded by the collective grief that's there. And in addition to feeling helpless, for one, which, you know, I know I turn to my ancestors when that happens, but so many of us are really walking around, as you said, there are people who hold the grief for their family, and the people who hold the grief for the community, and those people, which we call the caretakers, that you know, of the family and the community, really need to you know, get to a place where they can come and lay that burden at the feet of the ancestors, because it can wear you down physically. You know, I see grief manifested in physical illness that sometimes people don't understand why they are ill, why they are, you know, why they're sick and tired and dying at death's door, and not recognizing the source of that. And you said earlier when you were talking about you feeling that this is not your personal thing anymore, that you are, you're working on behalf of the collective, and so you need to constantly go and refresh yourself so
that's
that you
right.
can continue the journey. And that speaks to many people who are out there fighting the fight and needing to be able to come back and to anchor themselves and to shed and to cleanse and to layer. So I really felt that as you spoke about that, and a young lady, I could feel that she recognizes it and spoke to it, because she is probably the carrier of the grief in her family.
That's true. You're right on. And this is the reason why people like this need a special attention and special acknowledgement, because they are oftentimes the victim of an acknowledged healing work that they're doing on behalf of too many, most of whom will never even know that someone else is laboring hard in holding the gates of wellness on their behalf.
Exactly.
And so it is really, again, another source of deep emotion to see that we live in a world in which some of us who come here as the healer of our family, the healer of our community, are more or less the least acknowledged within the larger community, and yet they're holding a very, very important gate of the human wellness. Should these people be able to come together, it will definitely make them feel better, you know. And this is the kind of thing I hope for. This is the kind of thing I wish for them, that the day come when it is possible for them to meet up with likeness, like-mindedness, in order to be able to feel supported, if anything, supporting each other in this process, in this kind of unrewarding job, has its reward in it, you know. So I don't know how much more to say about it. All I can see is the need to acknowledge the fact that there are more and more people like that who are the holder, the keeper of the grief of the collective.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So, Elder Melodoma, you mentioned that in doing, if someone wants to just begin the process of grief from a ritual perspective, something simple that they can do, you mentioned for them to include their ancestors, and there are many people who hear that term and may not know how to do that. So how would someone include their ancestors in their grief?
That's the point. Oh boy. The basic thing we all call to do is to establish a sacred corner somewhere in our dwelling place dedicated to the ancestors. We call that a shrine. It's a sacred space. It's a place where we know that when we go there, at least we are surrounded by our ancestors. Now, including the ancestors is an act of imagination and creativity of the type that has contemplative values associated with it. That means that you got to be able to feel and to imagine yourself surrounded by the dead that are associated with you. And this is just a personal effort that one has to make. It's not because you don't see them that they're not there. Our visual apparatus is limited. And so consequently, can we therefore transcend our visual to that place where we can see with our body, see with our heart and our soul? And if that is possible, because this is not the kind of thing you can teach somebody, but if it is possible to imagine something like this, then you can feel being surrounded by your ancestors. And by ancestor, I simply mean the dead people in your family tree, the one that have already crossed over, and who we may consider gone, but who are there without a body and nonetheless alive and well. So these are the ones that we must surround ourselves with. These are the ones we must be willing to talk to at the risk of being labeled some kind of crazy person. But we really have to know that the real path of healing could translate in the eyes of other people as us being rather crazy. In this day and age, it is an important radical step that we need to take to cross the boundaries of alignments and decorum to that place where eccentricity is more visible than fellowship, than, you know, acting in the expected way so that people don't label us one way or another. And so this is something that is easier done in the privacy of your own space than in public. And this is why when this comes out in community, it needs to be in sacred space, where everyone is expected to be a bit eccentric, that is to say, moving away from the norm, from the expected, from the social norm, that is. So, indeed, in practical thinking, this shrine allowed the person to sit in front of it and to imagine himself or herself surrounded by the ancestors and to act accordingly. And so above and beyond that, it will take some radical teaching initiative to get someone to be in that mode, in that frequencies. And that is much harder than one can imagine. And yet it is possible for each person to be able to imagine, you know, to feel the presence of the other, the invisible other. And this is what I was suggesting in my earlier proposal, that those who cannot have access to a public grief ritual be able at least to press themselves, to wet the ground of their own emotion using this particular model, just to see how it works.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Well, we're kind of approaching the end of our call here, and I just wanted to interject once again that Elder Maladoma will be in the Atlanta area on April, weekend of April 22nd. And for those that's just joining the call, to know that he will be having a public talk at the Shrine of the Black Madonna on Friday evening, April 22nd at 7 p.m. And he will also be conducting private divinations, individual divinations on Saturday and Sunday. Also, all of this will be on the West End. And if you're looking to schedule a divination while he is here with us in Atlanta, please give a call to his office. You can get that information at maladoma.com, or you can email info@maladoma.com to schedule a divination. I would suggest that you do so as soon as possible, because he does get rather booked up rather quickly. So go ahead and make that call and join us for the talk on Friday evening, April 22nd, where we will have our elder with us live and in person. He hasn't been in Atlanta for a while, and I know that we're looking forward to seeing him here again. So I just wanted to make sure that you pencil that in, mark that, and save that date, and we look forward to seeing you then.
Beautiful.
Over to you, John. Okay.
So since we have come up on the end of the show, I would like to thank everyone for joining tonight. We really appreciate the callers that called in. Actually, we appreciate everyone that actually participated in the show tonight. And join us again in a couple of weeks for another show. I'll actually post the next show. And in closing, I would like to give Elder Maladoma an opportunity to say any closing remarks.
Well, we are at a really critical juncture of our evolution, and we need to understand that there are duties associated with that. That our ancestors are calling for the best in us, the gift in us, to become more explicitly shown in the world. One must always ask oneself the question, how much am I showing, am I bringing my gift, am I sharing that gift that was given to me to bring to this world and to make available to others, so that I can position myself as a recipient of their own gifts. It is important that we understand that we are not a random occurrence in this world. And the reason why we speak about grief has a lot to do with that we are here place at this time and space in order to make our medicine shine, to rise into the plate of our responsibilities and to join hand together when the going gets tough so that together we can make the going a lot easier. And so in that process, we always need to call constantly on our ancestors to show us the way, to guide us, and in the process, show a great deal of positive posture, thinking, attitude in front of the darkest challenge and adversity that may present itself to us, knowing that as long as we are surrounded by our ancestors, we're never alone. And it is in this context that we need to grieve together, to come together in order to remember our emotional self, that we are vessels of emotion and that emotion heals. And therefore, let's look forward. Let's look forward to that and really reach out to our ancestor to make that happen to all of us. Ashe.
Ashe. Ashe. Mm-hmm. I'm so grateful that you were able to join us this evening,
likewise.
Elder Maladoma. Enjoyed
likewise.
Deeply the conversation. Mm-hmm. And we look forward to having you again. Well, I know that you've been on the show before. I look forward to having you again. More healing wisdom of Africa.
That's
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And good night.
Thank you, Elder Maladoma. Thank you.
Have a good night.